All right, and we're back. Time now to look through the window of baseball with the great Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. We do it for Marvin Windows and Doors, and of course, Truett & White, the professional builder's choice. Bruce, good morning. How are you today?
Doing well, Marty. How's it going?
Very well, and I guess you're ready for all the doubleheaders today on Memorial Day.
Bring them on. Let's play three.
We're playing none. there are no doubleheaders. We don't do that. That's not our style. We don't do that.
But, well, it's kind of a shame. They keep talking about shortening the schedule, and that would be one way to make it happen.
You think
nobody seems to like them anymore?
No, it's funny. Yesterday, of course, on Saturday, it became so tortured in Colorado that they just threw out the window of the idea of the split doubleheader and said, "Look, if you're in here, just stay here. If somebody else comes with a ticket, you give them the seat, and you find another seat." That was a first for me.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that, but I don't like the idea of the split doubleheader. I mean, you don't have to stay for the whole whatever it is, but, I mean, just charge separate tickets. This just seems wrong to me.
All right. Someone that grabbed my headline this morning for me and going through the notes, and that is Javier Lopez. Bruce, in the history of baseball, we love the left-handed reliever, the guy who can just come in and get an out. And you go back to Steve Hamilton and Bill Henry and, some of the giants of the 60s, and there's just so many. Richie Rodriguez, remember him?
But sure,
this
Sparky
Javier,
Lyle.
Yeah, Sparky. But this Javier Lopez, 22 of 23 inherited runners stranded, and they bring him in for the toughest lefties, and he's unflappable, and he gets the job done.
He's really amazing. I mean, at a time when relievers are considered expendable, and sure they had a good year, but they're going to fall apart the next year. That's one of the great pickups of the Sabian era. And on top of it all, the guy is just so classy and erudite and gentlemanly and interesting. He's got a great background. And year after year now the guy's got three rings and he's looking for a fourth.
Yeah, and he's got another one. I think he was with the Red Sox. He got
that's
one.
That's right. He's already got four. He's looking for five.
Yeah, he's got, it's the Michael Jordan, one for every finger for him.
Yeah.
But just look at Lincecum today as well. And I did the stats, and I talked to Andy Baggerly earlier. And Andy said, well, the sabermeticians, they'll tell you his BABIP and blah, blah, blah may not be as good as you like to see. I'll tell you, Bruce, when this guy is on, he is as tough as anybody. One home run given up the whole season. Runners in scoring position. He's got a great batting average. Lefties don't touch him. I think the guy is just a major turnaround for me this year. He may be the second best pitcher on the team.
Yeah, I mean, the esoteric stats that have nothing to do with what he's doing. I mean, every time I hear BABIP, I want to give the guy an indigestion pill. but I mean, this guy, just look at his ERA. Look at the raw numbers, the numbers that matter to the players. Did he get the win? Did he allow any runs? I mean, is he have command? Is he walking the ballpark? Obviously not. Because he's lost the great fastball, you can't expect this to happen every time out, but he's becoming a smarter pitcher, just as we speak, and it's been a real lifesaver, and, totally justifying the fact that he's still here. I think everybody's happy with that, especially him. He belongs with the Giants, and, boy, he's really coming through lately.
Yeah, I love the matchup. Now, Milwaukee, you go into Milwaukee, and I just think of the word Milwaukee. And it's got great baseball tradition as a minor league city in the American Association, the Milwaukee Brewers. I think Casey Stengel managed the Milwaukee Brewers, I think, in the 40s. And not having a great season. I think this is right. Not having a great season, the fans really had turned on him. And they had to award the most valuable player at the end of the year. And they gave it to the taxi cab driver who ran Casey over and broke his leg. I mean, it was that kind of town, the beer town, and Bill Veeck was part of it with all the promotions. And then, of course, Bushville wins. The Boston Braves go there. And just a golden era of National League Milwaukee baseball in the 50s. And then all of a sudden it went sour, and Bud Selig got in the middle of it and tried to keep the team there by filing lawsuits. They went to Atlanta, the franchise did, and then Seattle comes into existence after a year of just disaster in Seattle. At the end of spring training, the truck is leaving, and they say, no, don't go to Seattle. Take a right and go to Milwaukee. And Bud Selig is in the middle of that. What a background for Milwaukee baseball.
Yeah, well, you gave me that great book, Bushville Wins, about the Braves of the late 50s, which I really relate to, because I started going to games in 58 with my dad at the L.A. Coliseum, and it seems like we were always out there to see the Braves, and a lot of doubleheaders, actually. And, you know, that's when I really plugged into Henry Aaron, Eddie Matthews, and Johnny Logan, just Warren Spahn and Burdett, just on and on. Great, great teams. Dale Crandall. And when I got to cover the 1982 World Series with the Brewers and playoffs with the Angels and the World Series against the Cardinals, all I could think of was here I am in County Stadium and I'm thinking about those old Braves teams.
Yeah, I've never taken. I must tell you, I've never taken to the Brewers. What it is. Now, of course, you had the Harvey Keene's Wall Bangers and a very exciting team, the one you just described with Gorman Thomas and Ben Ogilvy and, Molitor and Yount and people like that. I mean, they're tremendous Hall of Famers. But Cecil Cooper was in there as well, Pete Vukovic. But somehow Bud Selig's fingerprints were all over. Then he had him switch leagues.
Yeah, just wrong. I'm right with you on the Brewers. And, the park they play in now, Miller Park, is just terrible. I mean, it has zero atmosphere. It's nice that it has a roof and they can play during bad weather, but it doesn't feel like baseball at all in there.
Have you been in there?
Oh, yeah. I've been there several times. I was there during Bond's home run chase and a couple other times.
Yeah, someone said that maybe the air conditioning isn't the greatest. It's almost like a hothouse or something, that maybe it's not that comfortable. Do you find that?
Yeah, it feels like you're in an aquarium or something. It's not baseball. It doesn't feel like County Stadium. For all of its faults, it was a little bit antiquated, but man, that felt like baseball. And the Giants Park, a lot of the new parks feel like baseball, not this one.
All right. Now we hit Memorial Day, and it is one of the markers of the season. We go through this July 4th, Labor Day, and of course it makes sense because you got about a quarter pole Memorial Day. You're almost halfway there. July 4th, you're about three quarters there on Labor Day, so you really get a feel for it. You have any feel for the West and maybe the Cardinals, Washington, the Mets, what's going on right now in the National League?
I'm thinking it looks kind of familiar in terms of the postseason picture because, I always like the Cardinals, just unrelentingly like the Cardinals. The Washington's got their thing together. The Dodgers and the Giants are right there with another great race looming. And, these are the teams that I think are going to be the biggest factors. They were last year, and they are once again, which to me is not a bad thing. I think they all have tremendous appeal in their own way. The Dodger-Giants thing has really been interesting this year. The Giants, they kind of own them in a little bit, especially at home. And I don't think that the Dodgers are quite – they don't quite have the swagger. They're not quite as fearsome as they've been in the past. But they're still very, very good. And, that to me, those four teams are the ones that stand out.
The Mets are the one for me, and I go back to 1969 with the Mets, and where they came out of nowhere. And the thing we have to remember as we go through the season, which I think you and I do fairly well, that is, it's a long season. And when you get to August, you look for the arms, you look for those pitchers that can sort of jet propel you through that last 45 games of the season. And the Mets have those young pitchers now. Matt Harvey's, they say maybe dead arm, maybe not, but they're going to push him back a day. I still think, look at the Mets, and I think in 1969 with Severin, Kuzman, and those
Gary
pitchers.
Gary Gentry
and Tug McGraw and Nolan Ryan and Jim McAndrew and those people and Ed Charles and Don Clendenin was not a great offensive team. It really wasn't. Al Weiss was there, Bud Harrelson, I guess, Jerry Grody, Cleon Jones, and Tommy Agee. How about that for a memory? Pretty good.
Well, you just about nailed the whole team there.
I think I did, and Gil Hodges was the manager. But I just look for pitching. I tell you, I look for those young pitchers that can get it done, and then I look at the Giants and say, well, maybe another month, and then we'll kind of figure out where they're at with Lincecum and Vogelsong and Hudson. I think the Giants next month for me, the next month of baseball is very important.
Yeah, well, it's a great contrast to the Mets, because they got DeGrom and Harvey and Syndergaard, and that's, that's really looking like the present and the future. It's what every team would like to have, a stable of young arms like that. The Giants are kind of the flip side. These guys have a lot of mileage on them, except for Heston, but they're holding up pretty well. I mean, Hudson loses in Colorado. That's whatever. You can't even figure that out. He's never won in Colorado.
No, he hasn't.
But they're out of there, thank goodness. And their pitching's been good. So, it's a great contrast. I always tend to go with the guys who've done it before, but like you say, that 69, just among many teams that have a young pitching staff. And the A's did that in 81. They took the league by storm with Norris and McCaddy and Rick Langford and Matt Keogh. You know, so it's always a fascinating thing to follow. And there's never an absolute. It's always going to surprise you a little.
Yeah, youth. I always thought youth helps in the summer because you know, the dog days and back east and all that. It's nice to have a young team. And a young pitching staff at that point, someone that could get it done. I think that's the key. All-stars for the Giants, I want to just touch it gently in the embryonic stage because Bochy is the manager. It is June 1st, going to come up in a week. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's only 5 or 6 weeks before the game. Whether Brian Price will be there or not is another story for the Reds. That's one that I think he should be gone by then. But getting back to the Giants, who do you see? Just beginning here. Any potentials?
The first name I think is Crawford, because he has ascended to the point where right now. I mean, if he's going to be hitting 300, he's the best all around shortstop in the league. I mean, Anderson Simmons I think is a little bit better defensively, which means he's absolutely mind blowing. He's hitting about 250. He'll hit the ball out occasionally. I think Crawford and Simmons will both wind up somewhere around 270. And I don't think Crawford is a superior player, but I think right now he's got the edge. The kid in Miami, Hecheverry, is fabulous defensively. And, you know, Tulowitzki is always in the picture, but, you know, he's always seems to be hurt. His numbers aren't terrific. Is he going to be traded and everything? I just think Crawford is the real guy at shortstop right now in the league. And then, of course, you know, Posey's always going to be there. For Posey to be starting for the National League, either Posey or Molina, either way, I don't even want to look at the numbers. Those are your guys.
Right.
And then after that, you know, it's who knows? I mean, they got a lot of guys with, you know, Pagan sitting really well. I think it's probably Pence probably doesn't have a shot. He's coming in too late. But I think, you know, Pagan's got an outside shot. And as far as the pitchers go, that's really hard to say. I mean, you're going to have to wait until it gets around. But Bumgarner, it just, you know, his reputation is going to get him there, and then well deserved. So I think Posey, Crawford, and Bumgarner right now, and you know, probably one of the relievers.
Yeah, I think so, and I think Pagan, you know, again, number three hitter. This is not Mickey Mantle. It's not Ted Williams. He's 315, no homers, 11 RBIs, but he has stepped into that three spot, and nobody blinks an eye. He's got it done.
Yeah, and he's really an exciting player. You know, he's incredibly dynamic out there. He's you know, he's demonstrative. He's really athletic. He absolutely goes for it. You hope that his back holds up, and it has, which is great. But he's a different kind of number three hitter. But he plays the game so hard and with such animation that he's really a treat.
Yeah, he makes something happen. All right, one last thought for you. Bernie Williams, his number gets retired. Bernie Williams, give me a perspective on Bernie Williams, his career, and maybe some more accolades that may be coming his way.
Well, he's a guy that when you look back on him, I think you appreciate him more than at the time. He was on those Yankee teams in the late 90s. Those were some of the best teams we've ever seen. The 98 team might have been the best team in the modern time, certainly in the argument. But, you know, you had Jeter and Paul O'Neill, all these big personalities, you know, Petit and Cone and Posada and Mariano Rivera and just so many. Everywhere you look, there was a tremendous player. And meanwhile, Bernie Williams is always sitting around 300, a very smooth outfielder, you know, extremely classy guy. You know, you learn that he plays, you know, the guitar, you know, at a high level. He's the epitome of class. And Hall of Famer, I don't think so, but in the Yankees Hall of Fame and the way their great players are remembered, he's right in there.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking yesterday, if you know, Yankees won four of six, I think, something like that, or four of five. And I said, boy, if the Giants won four of six, and you just named all the Hall of Famers or potential Hall of Famers on the Yankees, and I'm saying, all right, now, here, if Giants have won four of six and their Hall of Famers are...
Right,
they are?
Exactly. Yeah. Well,
they don't, other than the manager, who, I mean, maybe Buster Posey.
Posey's got a shot. Posey has a shot. If he gets, you know, winds up with like five rings and ten all-star appearances, you know, he's, the numbers don't blow you away, but he is a batting champion. I think he's got a shot. But, it's a different deal. And I didn't mean to call any Pettit Petit. I'm just so used to saying Petit.
Good. Yosmero Pettit. How about that?
Yosmero. We'll switch him around
right.
for the day.
Yeah, and then the Giants could use him. All right. Hey, a pleasure. Enjoy the day, and we'll look forward to talking to you next weekend.
You bet, Marty. Thanks a lot.
All right. That is Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle.